You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So what are the changes being made to the science funding system as outlined in the SSAG report, and has the government responded to these recommendations yet?
Thanks for the question. I would like to start answering it this way. To understand the changes being made to the science funding system as outlined in the SSAG report, I think it's important to start from what are they actually changing from? For many people, that's not always clear. It comes as there's changes to something. So I think it's important to understand that there is a science and research system in New Zealand, and it is known to be underfunded in international comparison. So New Zealand's investment in science and research doesn't hold up. There are very diverse institutional structures. So in the past, we had Crown Research Institutes, for example, to deliver applied research in the interest of the New Zealand public. We have universities, of course. We have centers of research excellence are part of a research system. The main point is there's people working in the research system. We also have researchers at local government level working in the research system, actually, right? So it's actually a diverse system of people doing research and science to address challenges, to discover new things, which then might lead to products. And there was always an identified lack of transfer from more fundamental discoveries or work on research questions to entrepreneurship. But what's actually true for New Zealand system is that researchers are punching above their weight in terms of the scale of this country, the quality and the quantity of the research output. If you look at all the reports, is actually very, very respectable. Given that, there is a historic underfunding. So that's, I think, important to understand. And I think to anyone who listens to this, it's also important that researchers and scientists are members of this society. So these are people who are going to work. They chose the science career to work in that profession because they have this sort of very detailed expertise over a long time of dealing with specific questions. So that's, I think, the starting point, what we're changing from. So we're changing the system for these people working in it. So what the government is changing in response to the SSAG report, we should solve the underfunding issue. Yeah, we should fund this more robustly because the system is very fragile. Because those people working in it are people. So they go to work, they have stress through workload, they have families that they're spending time with, but underfunding a system, we put strain on the system because we may distribute the weight on fewer people's shoulders. And we might also not always see what these people actually do while they're doing their work, because they have to disseminate their research and so on and so forth. And by underfunding them, we cut them off, for example, from international collaboration. And so solve the underfunding issue is one big thing that the SSAG report outlines to change, with recommendations that are in the detail. And the second part is that it recommends to change the institutional layout, how this funding is given into the system and provided to the different people and entities that undertake research, which in the past was quite diverse. So different institutions were the places where you could ask for research funding, where you would deliver your proposals to, and they are recommending to change that. Now, the government has taken up quite a few of those recommendations to change the institutional makeup of how funding is disseminated, and also how decisions about funding are made, which means there will be an individual institution to administer the funding, which is one body that researchers will go to ask for a lot of the different research programs. And there will be another new entity as well that sets the strategic priorities, what funding should go to. So I think that's probably the best way to explain to people what is going on here, because there's, if you read the reports, a long list of very detailed changes that have all very, very different sometimes very local implications, sometimes more systemic one. But I think from a high level, the important bit is the government picks up structural changes and they will have implications, and some of them will be useful for researchers because it takes away confusion of where to ask and the timelines and the alignment of funding. But it might also centralize the decision making about research strategy, so what we find important to support, in a single entity that now carries a lot of responsibility of getting the answer to that right in the interest of New Zealand's public.
That's a good segue into the second question. The government over the last, over this term has talked about science research in terms of delivering economic benefit and growth for New Zealanders. How do you feel about the strategic insistence on growth and economic return in science? And do you think that these reforms that the government's choosing to pick up, these structural changes, are set to achieve this? Or are we still lacking something, lacking a final kicker or a silver bullet in this ecosystem?
Maybe I say two things about that one. So first is what will or might deliver economic benefit now may actually not do so in the future. So there is a concern around this sort of all eggs in one basket danger, which means when you prioritize very strictly with, as we just heard, a limited amount of research funding and actually not an increasing, not even with inflation, so in net terms, decreasing amount of research funding and then concentrating that actually means the winners get picked, and but they might not be the winners in 100 years' time. So there's this sort of long-term forward-thinking risk that might miss economic potentials that we can't even foresee just yet. And the second thing to say is that there is research with immediate economic benefit that has a shorter pathway to commercialization. But that sometimes only appears so. It appears very short and very fast once something gets patented, for example, and commercialized. But usually there is 10, 20 years of research happening before that. So the time to scientific impact in commercialization for a lot of things that are quite transformative and disruptive to how we do things or what we do can take a long time. So there's a sort of timescale issue with economic benefit that kind of expects something to happen that isn't necessarily so by the nature of the amount of thinking and work it takes to discover a potential area of progress. And so there is a huge risk in that currently there is a very, very short-term expectation that in lots of areas can't even be necessarily fulfilled.
I suppose the question then to ask is, as given your field and given your expertise, ideally a science ecosystem for funding and research pipelines is able to enable New Zealand scientists to not only deliver economic benefit, but to solve complex systems levels problems. In your view, what do you think needs to happen for our science system from the bottom up, right? Speaking from schools and communities all the way up to cutting edge research at our universities, what do you think needs to happen? What do you think needs to change in order to actually enable that sort of complex system level problem solving and that economic benefit that doesn't premeditate winners, but shapes markets and growth?
Yeah, that's a fascinating question. It kind of ties a little bit, as you said, to that economic growth question as well, because one thing that you need for economic growth or for being an entrepreneurial nation is actually being an entrepreneurial nation, right? And that means that spirit has to be in the culture. It has to be a desirable career pathway. So you don't just say, oh, the university is now commercialized and then all this entrepreneurial activity is going to happen. But New Zealanders have to think that that is what they want to do. And if you want to think that all the way through from the bottom up, what you want to do is you want to inspire kids. And I think you don't want to inspire them just for science or just for STEM. You want to inspire them to think about like really long-term futures. You want to think people to think about how will we build houses? How will we access food? How will we connect to each other using technology? Yeah, so that instead of saying, oh, we want to invest in advanced technology, it's actually the question of how we eat, what we eat, how we access health services. It's those bigger challenges that come with a vast complexity, and the answer to any of those is not just an advanced technology answer, but actually the coordination of thought around how do we go about this with solutions, but also what does that do, for example, to human behavior and our communities, and is that actually going to improve outcomes? And that includes that the people are part of that intellectual endeavor across a range of jobs and activities, and it's not just an isolated concern for scientists to think about something and then we magically transform. It's actually an imagination of what New Zealand of the future looks like, and that's where you want children at all levels of school, you want them to be part of that conversation, and that will lead for people to actually envision careers in science, envision careers in technologies, because they know why they're doing it, what they're doing it for. So I think that's the critical piece to turn generations into potential scientists is by giving them that sort of bigger purpose of why we're doing it for each other, because it's about having a vision of the place and finding where people can be part of creating it.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.